good morning. It's Sunday, February 7th, 2021. And before I forget, I want to let you know that we will not be recording next Sunday, February 14th. We're going to take the week off from our preparations and enjoy a visit with one of our grandsons who is coming to visit. But we'll be excited to be back with you on the 21st. Well, in parts 1 and 2 on the series God's Word Concerning Himself, we have considered that the Lord, Jehovah, the I Am, is eternal, and as such, all of His attributes are eternal. He is eternally faithful, eternally holy, eternally unchanging, eternally sufficient, and eternally love. And then as Larry taught last week, He is eternally light. He is eternally eternal. Layer upon layer, from everlasting to everlasting. Today in part 3, we're going to look at God's eternal power, His eternal knowledge, and His eternal presence. Now these three are unique aspects of our eternal God, in that they unite to give us confidence to trust in Him. After all, if He were all-powerful, but not always present, or didn't have knowledge of all things, even though He's all-powerful, is He there when we need Him? And can we trust Him if He doesn't know everything about the situation? If He has knowledge of all things, but not all power or promised presence, once again, you can see things could quickly go awry. And if He is everywhere present, no big deal if He doesn't have power and infinite knowledge. What difference would it make where He is? Who would even care? So you can see, that's what I mean. His omnipotence, His omniscience, and His omnipresence, they all merge, they unite to give us solidarity in our trust in Him. Literally, He covers all the bases. There's no stone unturned. He has eternal power for any and every situation where power is needed. He has eternal knowledge of everything, even the heart of every person. And He is everlasting to everlasting. His eternal presence is everywhere, all the time, at all times. And in reading the scriptures concerning the one and only true God, we see that all three of these come into play. So we're not going to handle one and then the other and then the other, because they're merged. They're all together. You can't really teach one without touching on the other two, because it's three. It's three things that come together, that merge and unite. Looking at the book of Job in chapter 26, Job is rebuking one of his friends, Bildad, because he had given an assessment of Job's afflictions. Bildad had spoken to Job like he was all-knowing. And if you read Bildad's analysis of Job's situation in chapters 8 and 18, you can see that he did not speak with the heart of God that we have come to know. So in verse 2 of Job 26, we'll begin in reading Job's response to Bildad. And I'm going to read it from the New Living Translation. And of course, you can look that up. Or for those of you who get the emails, the link will be there for you to get to that. Job 26:2. How you have helped the powerless. How you have saved the weak. How you have enlightened my stupidity. What wise advice you have offered. Where have you gotten all these wise sayings? Whose spirit speaks through you? The dead tremble, those who live beneath the waters. And the dead in the Young's Analytical Translation is a word for spirits of the deceased. And in this case, you would quickly see that it's evil spirits. It also refers to those in the land of Canaan who were always mad, ever enraged at the children of Israel. Goliath was a Canaanite. Not only were they referred to as giants in the land, but they were pretty big into evil. They were giants of evil as well. But look at this in verse 6. The underworld, it says. The underworld, that spirit realm, that churning of the sea that's hidden under the waters. It says the underworld is naked in God's presence. The place of destruction is uncovered. Now, why wouldn't we desire God in our lives? He is all-powerful, all-knowing, and everywhere at once. In verse 7, it goes on, God stretches the northern sky over empty space and hangs the earth on nothing. He wraps the rain in his thick clouds, and the clouds don't burst with the weight. He covers the face of the moon, shrouding it with his clouds. And again, Young's analytical translates the face of the moon as his throne. His throne is veiled. It is God covers it. And these are spiritual, it's not necessarily literal. It's a figurative. Verse 10. He created the horizon when he separated the waters. He set the boundary between day and night. So it is true. During creation, God did these things to the physical heavens and the physical earth. But you can also look at this section as figurative. Metaphorically, hasn't he set boundaries between light and darkness? Sure. Verse 11. The foundations of heaven tremble. They shudder at his rebuke. And this is interesting because you think, what is rebuke? You know, I've been around people that I've had very high esteem for what appears to me their walk with God. You know, not necessarily because of what they do, but because of the fruit you see in their lives. And you know, when you're around somebody like that, their lives are almost a rebuke, it, as well as an inspiration, as well as an exhortation for me to make mine better. But when evil looks us in the face, they shudder. When evil looks at the face of God that is in everything, they shudder. It's like sitting down to read the Word. Many times I read a passage and I'm reproved by what the Word says, but it says that it's for our profit. It's for right teaching. It's for reproof. It's for correction that I can get back to where I need to be. Verse 12, by his power, the sea grew calm. By his skill, he crushed the great sea monster. And the word skill here is understanding. And you know, it's kind of laughable, but what good is power without understanding? Without understanding, power would be a loose cannon. You know, to have a bunch of power and have no understanding about how to use it. So this is a spiritual reference. Oftentimes in the Bible, seas and waters, they are reference to the movements in the spirit realm. Verse 13. His spirit made the heavens beautiful, and his power pierced the gliding serpent. Now, you might think he made the heavens beautiful. We're not talking about interior decorating. The word beautiful means he made the heavens clear. He made it bright. Remember, no darkness at all. Yep. The word for gliding means fleeing. And I think of James 4:7, where the believers are instructed to resist the devil and he will flee from you. It literally means he will wither away. He will, you picture a snake and maybe you put a shovel on his head and the rest of his body just starts writhing and circling and knotting up. Well, that's what light does to the serpent. He's just going to be in pain to get away. He will flee. So we resist him by humbling ourselves to God's power, to God's wisdom, to God's presence. Job continues in verse 14, and I just love this. These are just the beginning of all that he does. Merely a whisper of his power. Who then can comprehend the thunder of his power? You know, that's for sure. Who can comprehend? No one can explain God's power. You know, we barely hear a whisper to his eternal greatness. Larry and I sometimes will just be sitting and talking, and we thrill about how much more we have come to know about the nature of God. And it's funny, because in the same conversation, we conclude that even though we know more, we are just seeing the tip of the iceberg. It's just a whisper. What we know now is just a whisper. Do we know more than we did last year, the year before, 20 years ago? Yes, yes, yes. But even knowing all that, it is just a whisper, because there is so much more to know and many things that we will not know living on this earth. The thunder of his power, it metaphorically refers to the whole circuit of his divine power, all the mighty deeds which can be declared of God, his omnipotence, his omniscience. Did I finally say that right? His omniscience, his presence. Then these truths about God are given a personality. You know, we know that he's all-powerful, he's all-knowing, he's everywhere present, but yet he has this personality that goes along with those things. And the personality is, he is light, he is love. His personality has these boundaries. He's faithful, he is sufficient, he is holy, and so forth, as we've been looking at. And this is how we come to know God. It's hard to successfully worship God if he is an ethereal entity to us, if he's ghostly, if he's vague. And although he is spirit, we can have a concrete concept of his spiritual being, so that we can move through our days upon this earth like children of the Most High should. In Psalm 147, verse 5, it says, "Great is our Lord, and of great power. His understanding is infinite." So, our God is great in the magnitude and extent of his power. His insight is infinite. And the word infinite, it deals with numbers, numerals. So, God's understanding is without numbers. His understanding is innumerable. His IQ knows no bounds. How about that? In Proverbs 3:7, we're warned, "Be not wise in thine own eyes." Because when you compare what we know to what God knows, there's no comparison. "Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil." In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, the verses just before the one I read, they tell us to trust in the Lord with all our hearts and lean not to our own understanding. Well, this is why. Man's knowledge and man's wisdom will never come close to infinity. And in reading Job 28 again in the New Living Translation, we're going to read some verses here. Starting in verse 1, Job said, "People know where to mine silver and how to refine gold. They know where to dig iron from the earth and how to smelt copper from rock." And in verse 12, "But do people know where to find wisdom? Where can they find understanding?" No one knows where to find it, for it is not found among the living. It is not here, says the ocean, nor is it here, says the sea. It cannot be bought with gold. It cannot be purchased with silver. Skipping to verse 21, it is hidden from the eyes of all humanity. Even the sharp-eyed birds in the sky cannot discover it. Verse 23, God alone understands the way to wisdom. He knows where it can be found, for he looks throughout the whole earth and sees everything under the heavens. Nothing is hidden from God, not one thing. Verse 28, and this is what he says to all humanity. The fear of the Lord is true wisdom. To forsake evil is real understanding. I repeat, respect, love, praise the one true God is true wisdom. Forsaking evil is real understanding. So wisdom and understanding are readily available. We, in fact, for born-again ones, we receive wisdom in the new birth. And as we eschew and avoid and walk around evil, we have understanding. Now, how does all that work? I don't know. But God says it works. Therefore, we prove it in our lives as we obey it. 1 Corinthians 1:30 says, but of him are ye in Christ Jesus, who of God is made unto us wisdom. And it goes on, and righteousness, and sanctification, and redemption. God has perfect knowledge of all things. There is nothing for him to learn because he already knows. He has not forgotten anything. God does not have to reason things out or deliberate over things or learn them gradually. He knows all. He is everlasting to everlasting. He knows the things mankind has yet to discover. His knowledge is absolute and unacquired. Not only does he have perfect knowledge, but he has perfect wisdom and understanding. Now, let's think this through. Based on all of this, there is nothing that can surprise God. He is never blindsided. So our trust in him really brings us comfort no matter our situation. God knows every need, every problem, every situation. And as we looked at a few Sundays ago, he is eternally sufficient to meet whatever the need is with his power, with his knowledge, with his presence. He is loving, compassionate, merciful. So any sense of guilt or embarrassment or dread that we might have in going to God, those are compliments of Satan. You know, God has not said in his word that we should ever dread going to him. And, you know, that thought really is a paper tiger. Because if we really believe that God is all-knowing, then what's to dread? He already knows before we even have the thought that I need to go to God and talk about this. He already knows. Psalm 139 verse 1 says, O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. See, he knows our habits. He knows. Verse 4, for there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. You know, it is possible to fool others. And honestly, I think there have been times in life when I've even fooled myself. Because you just get caught up in something. But God is not fooled even one time. He knows every heart intent. People will do things wrong. God knows that. He is loving, he is kind, he is just, he is merciful, he is gracious. He is not a punisher. He is not out to get even. What God is out to do is to get us back to him. That's what he is out to do. So we can always open our hearts to God. He already knows more about us than we know about us. When I talk to him, is he surprised at anything I have to say? No, not at all. He knows everything already, from everlasting to everlasting. So this powerful, all-knowing God is everywhere present. How many of us have thought about how nice it would be if we could be in two places at one time? How about sitting at your desk or your workplace and being on a vacation at the same time? That would be nice. I'm here and I'm there. One place for work and one place for fun. Or maybe parents who have more than one child and it ends up on a day that they have an activity at the same time. So what do? Well, they wish they could be two places at one time so they could enjoy both children's activity. But that is how it is with our God. He is eternally everywhere present for sure. We don't wait in line. We don't travel to where he is going to be. Jeremiah 23:23 says, "Am I a God at hand, saith the Lord, and not a God afar off?" You know, God is nigh. He is with us. He is with every person, all the time, with his mighty power. Verse 24, "Can any hide himself in a secret place that I shall not see him, saith the Lord? Do not I fill heaven and earth, saith the Lord?" Verse 7 of Psalm 139, "Whither shall I go from my spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up to heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, there thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it." We can relate, right? But that shouldn't keep us from seeking the knowledge of God. And I want to close with Jeremiah 29, verse 13. It says, "And ye shall seek me and find me, when ye shall search for me with all your heart." So, you know, this really getting to know God, knowing who he is, knowing his personality, if you will, and the boundaries that he has for himself, that he's faithful, that he cannot change. You know, this is a treasure hunt of our life. And it's much better than finding gold at the end of the rainbow, which probably doesn't exist. But, you know, to find wisdom and understanding. And I know in Proverbs it tells us, "With all thy getting, get understanding." With all of your getting, get wisdom. But with all of your getting, get understanding. So until we meet again on the 21st, God bless you. And Happy Hearts Day. I think we have a little holiday in the middle there. So bless your wonderful hearts. We love you.